That'll do. That's your lot.
Happy New Year.
See you next week.
It's old to say Happy New Year, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Haven't we said it yet?
Well, no, we haven't done it. It's the first one.
This you haven't done a podcast in, it seems like years.
We've just been trotting out pre-recorded drivel.
Well,
by which I mean high quality honed things.
No.
Well, you're busy. And also, they were limited. I think over Christmas, none of us saw any films.
No.
I think at the cinema for about 3 weeks, which is unheard of. For me, that's ridiculous.
Particularly like over Christmas, there was not much out, really.
There wasn't a lot, and no time, because doing other stuff.
You're getting drunk and eating turkey.
Well, of course.
You know.
Being ill, seeing family.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, we didn't do a podcast. Deal with it.
Try and cope.
But we're back.
We are back.
Yes.
And we also currently have a new presenter.
We do. We have our junior film reviewer here, young Joseph, who will... Actually, he's seen a film. He saw The King's Speech this week.
Oh, yes. What did you think of it, Joseph?
Rubbish.
That was his first word.
Oh.
Well, how about that?
Got the same problem as the king had. Yeah.
Oh. he did manage to... he was very good at it because it was his first time in a cinema. Mm. And it wasn't a mother and baby screening or anything. It was a normal screening.
Wow.
But we thought during the day it'd be quiet. But King's Speech has been doing really well.
Yeah.
And it's been packing them out on weekdays. And so we're a bit nervous because it's quite full.
Mm.
And so we got the disabled bit. And... And had the pram and thought he'll sleep throughout. We picked a showing where he always sleeps.
Right.
But the trailers are so loud.
Oh, yes,
I'm awake now. Oh, balls. but he was good. He was awake the whole film, but he didn't make noises. He just did the odd gurgle. No crying.
Right.
But he filled lots of the silences that Colin Firth left with gurgles.
Gurgles.
Fair enough.
Well,
which people might just thought was a soundtrack anyway. It's just
what
exactly? A weird speech impediment he had.
He just gurgled and then
suddenly came
out. He's a ventriloquist and then, you know.
Yeah.
So, big speech, Alexander Palace, you know, and now the Duke of York.
What? But yeah, so we're back. Have we introduced ourselves? I don't think we have.
I'm Paul Carenza.
Yes, I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jenny Masters. Hello. Yes. I like saying hello afterwards.
You do.
Fair enough.
Just to assert myself.
You're greeting, whereas we aren't. We're just, we're distant men.
Whatever. Deal with it.
Yeah.
I guess.
Your catchphrase.
I'm trying to get a catchphrase
right.
going.
Just deal with it.
Deal with it.
I don't think it's very you.
You don't think so?
No.
It's
all
right.
It's a bit harsh.
Fair enough. So this week we're going to be looking at King's Speech.
Yes.
And 127 Hours.
Yes. And Chronicles of Narnia, Voyage of the Dawn Treader. And...
A.K.A. Tekont Vodult...
Yes, that's what it's called in German.
Yeah. That's what the kids on the street are calling it.
Yes.
Deal with it.
No, let it go, Paul. Because we're in danger of it actually becoming a catchphrase.
Okay, fair point.
In a sort of ironic, weird way. And also Tron Legacy.
Yes.
And maybe The Tourist, if we have time and can be bothered.
Yes. But clearly, the cinema-going public ignored it, and so may we.
Ultimately, if it was fine.
Ricky Gervais didn't in his Golden Globes.
Well, yes, which is harsh but funny.
Yeah.
Very good eye candy, though.
No, that is true.
We'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
But yes.
And I want a couple of quick things. Admin news.
Oh,
you
dear.
Call it what you like. No, not admin. one was... Yes, I saw this thing in the newspaper.
Ooh. Are you going to pull out the article and show the listeners?
Yes.
Oh, I like the rustle. Yeah, that's good.
It's real.
Real.
It's just a blank bit of paper. It's just a prop.
Open auditions for Batman Live.
Oh, wow.
How about that?
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
World Arena Tour looking for male and female actors 18 to 40.
Fair enough. There you go, Jen. You're one of them.
You are.
Ooh.
One of them. You're
Thank
either
you.
Into that.
Yes.
You can decide.
I don't think I've got the legs for Catwoman's latex.
You could play Batman.
Yeah. Joker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got the lipstick for that.
Your makeup's halfway there.
Yeah. No. Bring my own lippy.
I think I'm tempted to turn up just to see everyone there because it says character costumes are encouraged, which is going to be rubbish.
Oh,
so
no.
Dress up at home with whatever crap you can find.
It's going to be like the worst Halloween party.
It's going to be awful.
I'd love to turn up with my camera and just take some snaps. That'd be gold.
And they are going to queue. They're not going to let you into the building to queue. You'll be queuing around the block, obviously, just to embarrass you in front of all the public.
Which paper was that in?
This was in the Gotham City Gazette. A.K.A. the Metro.
Fair enough.
Well,
surely everyone will just think it's some massive Fathers for Justice protest.
Exactly. Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. Please bring with you a copy of your CV and a current photograph. But of course, the photograph should be you as Batman.
Yes.
So
everyone will be wearing a mask.
I'm just curious. What do they want these people to do?
Well, it's an arena tour. So I'm guessing, I don't know, what do you do in an arena? Yeah. Batman will come in and...
Yeah, well, I think, you know sort of like in the Doctor Who... Proms performance they had, where they had this sort of a show, he came in and ran around a bit. And I think it's lots of stuff like that. There's presumably, it's like a low-level musical, almost.
He's got hundreds of Batmen.
Well, no, I'd imagine the actual thing will just be, Batman and Robin and some villains having a fight. but
no
the open
one stands all... a chance.
But they don't say in their stage combat skills or
no,
anything.
No, exactly.
Like that,
that's what I'm saying. They just—I bet they're just bored and want to laugh. We want to get some publicity, so you can then say, "Well, I auditioned for that. I was great, but they went another way, and that was it."
They went with someone who didn't have an enormous beer belly hanging out over his Adam West style Batman costume.
Actually qualified.
And they said 18 to 40, so you could be a 40-year-old tubby fella thinking, oh, I could be Batman, yeah, and get there and then go, right, now this martial arts expert's going to... just respond in the moment.
See what you can do. Yeah.
Well, you could end up with like, an 18-year-old Batman and a 40-year-old Robin. Should be a little bit weird.
Might work. Yeah, that's very true, yeah. 18-year-old Batman, 40-year-old Catwoman.
Maybe I should have a go. Maybe I could have a go.
I think it's worth giving it's worth turning
up. I actually have stage combat skills.
Well, there you are.
I think you've got the right look for Catwoman. If Anne Hathaway can do it, I think you can.
That's cool. And she is lovely.
That is true.
So.
Yes. But apparently some people are... Sorry, we've now deviated already, but this is recent breaking news about Anne Hathaway being cast as Catwoman in the new Batman film. Or as Selina Kyle. They're not saying that, Catwoman. So it might just be that she's just Selina Kyle. But I would have thought they'll go Catwoman eventually.
Probably.
But apparently some people... Although I've only heard this as people saying, some people are saying, that she's not sexy enough for Catwoman.
Oh, come on.
Well, exactly. And yet this seems to be met with people generally going, oh, don't be ridiculous.
Thing is, I'm imagining it's probably going on the back of a Love and Other Drugs, which I've yet to see, but isn't she meant to be a little bit of a minx in that? For
I think
a little
so.
While, at least.
But she is sexy. I don't see how anyone could question that, really.
I said to you that she seems outwardly to be more kitten than cat.
Yes.
You know?
Kitten woman?
Kitten woman.
Get Michelle Pfeiffer back as Catwoman. What's wrong with that?
True. She could probably still pull it off.
This mangy old mongrel in the corner.
That's very odd. Michelle Pfeiffer still looks phenomenal.
I didn't do that in sound. I didn't actually say it.
Oh, dear.
She's looking great for her age.
She is looking phenomenal. She's looking great even for someone
else. Anyone else's age.
How long do cats live for? A ninth life by now.
Well, yeah. But I think also in Batman Returns, they went for sort of ridiculously over sexual Catwoman. Oh, yeah, and it works brilliantly. But I think in a more realistic Bat film, they don't have to have this ridiculously sexy Catwoman. They can have someone slightly more normal.
Isn't she meant to be like a single lady with cats to begin with? So it's not as if...
I don't know Selina Kyle well enough from
she's
the comics.
She's meant to be a bit of a...
Oh, yeah, she's meant to be all kind of crazy cat lady.
Bit of a cat lady, yeah.
Yeah, so... well, Michelle Pfeiffer is to start with, and then...
Yeah.
Very true, yeah.
Comes around.
Shall we do King's Speech?
Yes.
I
think so.
That's correct.
Yeah. In the style of the King's Speech.
Yes.
Strapping is going to be a long time.
I thought it was a... film.
Fair enough. But this also ends up, of course, that we'll end up to have to swear at each
that's
other
very
off,
true.
Which may not be ideal with a baby in the room.
True.
And
Joseph.
So it's a big film. It's out Colin Firth, and you know everyone's talking about it, and that.
Yes.
Yeah. Colin Firth in the film. Everyone else is talking
stammering
about
his
does
way
eventually.
Through it.
Does eventually.
Yes. Yeah. With Helen Bonham Carter playing the Queen Mother.
Indeed. Geoffrey Rush playing Lionel Logue.
Yes. Geoffrey Rush seems to basically be playing Geoffrey Rush.
The speech of the rapist.
Yes.
Just a spelling thing.
It sounds like a little wrestler tag, like not the man, the legend.
Yeah. Speech therapist.
Yes. But it's slightly oddly as well. Geoffrey Rush looks a lot like the real Lionel Logue.
He does rather, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well, whereas... also Colin Firth made me think, oh yeah, I think George the VI looked a bit like that.
No,
he
looks nothing like him.
No.
Helen Bonham Carter, I think, could be the Queen Mother.
Very good.
I thought she was. I mean, she was very good. I was start the rolling with her. I thought she was marvellous, and I think a shoo in for award season.
I'd like to think so.
Dare I say?
Yes. Yeah, because she's not. I've only seen her recently in like the Harry Potter films or Tim Burton films.
Yeah,
so it's nice to see her do. You know, going back to her period costume.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, playing someone not too dotty and bonkers and you know, kind of, but just nicely.
But very, and also I kind of lost track of it being. I never really thought that's Helena Bonham Carter. You kind of she becomes a believable.
Also, as well,
queen.
Apparently her cousin films the current Queen every Christmas for her.
Really?
Her Queen Speech.
No.
So, it's all in the family. You know?
Yeah. So she's got form.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's all about who you know, isn't it?
Wow, very true.
It's all, it's all connections in it. It's all connections.
No, I thought she was great, very poised and regal, utterly regal.
Gave it a nice supportive role
in
every sense.
And also because a lot of the story of this is sort of about the stiff upper lippedness of the royals. No, you don't talk about your feelings and everything, just keep it suppressed constantly. And Geoffrey Rush dragging that out of him.
Mm.
Whereas Helen Bonham Carter, I think, does quite a good job of someone who is somewhere between the two. She's sort of quite happy being a bit relaxed, but also wants to maintain decorum.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Whereas I think Colin Firth as the king is very much, no, decorum, always, must have decorum, can't ever let it slip, ever. And then it's, you know, slowly adjusting to that as well.
Yeah. It was really nice seeing the tender family side as well.
Yeah,
particularly with our now queen.
Indeed, yes. Yeah, and, of course.
Yeah, and, seeing him telling the queen and Princess Anne.
Margaret.
Or Margaret, one of them.
Karen from Outnumbered.
Yes.
If you haven't seen Outnumbered, if you're from a different country perhaps, then you may not know there is a TV sitcom called Outnumbered, which is very funny.
Very good.
It's really funny.
The girl who plays Princess Margaret is in it as... they don't script it as such. They sort of just let the kids run riot.
And be kids.
And let the actors just absolutely cack themselves as to whatever's going to happen next. It's hilarious. but she was very... And I just thought casting-wise, I think it was a really good actor's film. Because Michael Gambon as George V
was
very good. Guy Pearce, unusual casting.
Yeah,
I
that was a slightly odd one.
Yeah.
Casting a younger Australian as the older English brother of the king.
Exactly.
Which seemed slightly odd.
Because I saw in one of these trivia things, it said, although he plays the older brother, he's actually 7 years younger than Colin Firth. I thought, well, and that's obvious. He looks younger.
I know.
Not like you hear, you know, sometimes you see this thing that says, oh, the actress who played the mother of this character was actually only 10 years. And you go, I'm surprised because she did it so well. But actually, I mean, it's not that Guy Pearce didn't do it well. He's got a young face.
He is looking slightly. You can see the age coming through on him. He's got a particularly around the face.
Yeah. I mean, compared to Memento era, he's noticeably older.
Yes,
but that's because it's 10 years ago. Now.
Yeah, sure.
11 years ago. Slightly odd. I mean, I don't know if in part it might just be the car because I don't know if Colin Firth was slightly older than the King really was.
Yeah,
so much thought if they cast a slightly younger brother, it'll kind of.
Odd choice, but I thought.
But it still works. It's not jarring. It's just sort of noticeable.
But generally, the casting I thought was very good, and the actors were. And it's Colin Firth's film, I thought entirely really.
Yes,
it could easily have been almost like a TV movie, really, this sort of historical piece. But actually, I thought the cast lifted it to make it more cinematic.
Absolutely, yeah.
And they do because it could have been focused very heavily on the abdication and World War II, and it's all. Sort of lots of little background events, which all fill out the main story of him and his speech.
Mm. Well, him eventually giving this first wartime speech.
Yeah, and I don't know if I think we probably hear the speech in its entirety.
I think pretty much, yeah.
I don't know the original one.
I know Mark Kermode made the point. He said it's quite nice to see a film where the happy ending is someone announcing war with Germany.
Yes,
and sort of hey,
everyone goes, yay, we've done it.
Result. There we go. Rather odd.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, some comments we had from people. Shall I read some comments from people?
Yes, please do.
George Egg, the fine comedian that is Mr. George Egg, book him now for your event.
Hmm.
Speaking of which, I'm on tour from Friday.
Are you?
Yes, I am indeed. With Lofty's Edinburgh show, Bath this Friday. On the off chance you hear the podcast by this Friday, come to Bath because you know there'll be empty seats, and then other places. So come.
Good. Fair enough. Do you not know your own tour dates?
Hang on a second.
Or just go to paulcarenza.com.
It's another rusty
another bit of paper.
That's nice. Yeah, hey. It's good.
I'm in Farnham and Leicester and Norfolk and Birmingham and Hull, Woking and London. So there you go.
Fair enough.
Come.
It's a world tour.
Bring your friends. And if you're not in the UK, come anyway.
Exactly. Get a flight.
Yeah. Get the rush on the Olympics because I did hear that they say that London has apparently 180,000 hotel rooms, apparently.
Right.
And they're expecting 1 million people for the Olympics.
Right.
So if you plan to come to
the
Olympics,
sharing.
Then good luck. But we've got a spare room here, so just an hour from London.
I've got a couple of sofas.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. We'll work something out.
George Egg, meanwhile. George Egg says, I thought the King's speech was brilliant, incredibly moving. I really liked the distressed walls in the speech therapist's
office. Yes.
Oh,
it is trashed.
Mm. I'd say it was the best film of 2010. Hold on, saw it this year. Sorry. There you go. And next time we'll be doing best films of 2010.
Yes, which will be slightly weird because in Britain, of course, we get some films later than America. So the King's Speech is in. We should cover this next year. But the King's Speech is in the BAFTAs, despite having only been released in 2011.
Yeah,
which is a bit odd. I don't think they had a London special
it before. I think as long as they release it before the, but I don't know. There's some must be some deadline thing. But
I think everyone they'll just bend the rules to make sure you can get the King's Speech in this year.
Shoo it in. Yeah, exactly. And Catherine Windle, our good friend Catherine, said,
"Love
the King's Speech." Was one of those films that is just lovely, but great as well. Lovely and great, which is good.
Well, I think lovely, lovely in tone and great in quality.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, yes.
Shows that you don't need violence, massive special effects to produce a fantastic film.
But think how much better it would have been with violence.
I read that and thought Jonathan was supposed to say about that. I was like, yeah, but it helps.
Exactly.
It really does help.
Wouldn't
to have
it be great? But then
effects.
If it had ended, if he gives the speech while storming the beaches on D-Day. you know, screaming out the speech at the Germans with a one-man army. Yeah. I mean,
I knew you'd read that thinking, that's what could have improved it. Yeah. I knew there was something missing.
A bit more bombing.
If the first if it ended with, like, the first 20 minutes of Saving Private Ryan, then, you know,
that'd
you're
very
laughing.
Good.
Well, not laughing, but, you know.
All the way.
But it would work out.
I think this is also one of the films that I've really recommended to my mum and dad. And not this kind of like, oh, this will be good for you, but as in, this is amazing, you should go and see it.
Yeah.
And I know full well that they will, you know, enjoy it. Yeah. When you get, because they've, you know, they've got slightly lower tolerance. There we go. He wants to get involved.
Hey, Mr. Joseph Mann wants to make some comments about the film.
Yeah.
Yes. Little known fact as well, that the King's Speech is the sequel to James the Giant Peach. It's true.
Really?
No. It's all about the... The peach that belongs to the king. And they go off on adventures.
Paul's got such a guilty grin on his face right now.
I don't know where this can go.
are you talking about this train of thought or the baby that you're holding?
Particularly the train of thought.
Fair enough. There's also slight controversy about the whole swearing scene, which
people
wanted to change it. But it's ridiculously funny. And it makes sense in a speech therapy context. He does just unleash a torrent of swear words. And not... the worst swear word.
Yeah.
But all the other ones.
Everything else.
But brilliantly timed, and it's very comedic, funny. And also serves a purpose.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't put anyone off. It's utterly inoffensive.
No, I thought the script was very good, all that stuff about do you know any jokes? Well, the timing isn't my strong point. Just nicely done. I think one thing I did think was, only slightly against it, was quite early on, you know, he comes back and says, right, I'm here for the speech therapy then. Mm. And then he says, right, okay, and he gets him rolling around on the floor and running up to open windows, that sort of thing. And I kind of thought, that's the sort of thing I'd quite like, I would be happy a bit more of a build-up to that. Like, to let, you know, he comes for the lesson, and then over about half an hour, realise it's very distracting, isn't it, with a little gurgling. This is quite appropriate that this is how we watch the film.
Exactly.
Distracted by occasional splatter.
Although I suppose that those kind of things of, you know, the exercises and the tongue twisters and all the other things are quite standard speech therapy and voice work.
True.
Well, at least I think it is.
Well, I think so, yeah. But I was thinking maybe we could have built up to him rolling around on the floor.
But it's just sort of
I think it would have made it a longer film, and I think actually it didn't seem too long, short.
Because they don't focus too much on the mechanics of it all.
No.
Because that's what the king wants to do, is just the mechanics. And then, but he, you know, Lionel slowly sort of gets to the root of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting seeing the difference between the first therapist that we see. He's basically asking to stuff 8 boiled marbles into his mouth. And then speech,
which does nothing beyond making him really angry.
Yeah.
And almost choking him.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's not going to work. I'm not a therapist and I can see that.
Exactly.
Very, very good.
No, but all in all, a good film. Absolutely, we shall see what happens in the coming weeks.
Yes.
It's already hotly tipped for Oscars and BAFTAs and Emmys and Grammys and...
aunties
and... auntie and uncles.
For a completely different sort of film, really, is 127 Hours, which only I have seen.
So come on then, John.
I really wanted to see this.
Well, it'll still be in cinemas.
Well, yeah.
Probably not one to take a baby to, although he wouldn't know what he's seeing.
I've been amazed with this film, just how much every interview and everything I've heard about it, they've given away the ending.
It's
kind of being pitched as a sort of a film where you need to know the ending to go and see it. But I thought I'd rather go and see it and not know the ending, I would have thought.
Except I think because it's a very well-documented story, and it's the film's almost being marketed as, you know, it's building up to this.
I've heard this done quite a lot recently, saying, it's a true story, therefore we don't need to hide the ending from you, because you'll know it because it's a true story.
But unless
it's a big true story, you know, like a sort of a big war film or something like that, often, you know, I hadn't heard the story of the 127 hours thing before the film had come out.
No, fair enough.
I thought many wouldn't have done.
But I think in part it was such a sort of an achievement what he did that's why that's the main selling point of the film.
I suppose otherwise
it's just saying, it's a bloke trapped for 5 hours and then he dies.
Goes mountain climbing.
It's not much of a story.
No,
whereas if you know it's sort of building to a point. It's the telling of it rather than just the ending. And you know, I won't say exactly how it all pans out, but ultimately he has to cut his own arm off in order to survive. He's a mountain climber who falls and gets trapped. No one knows where he is, and he has to cut his own arm off in order to survive. But it's the it's the telling of that. And yes. He's sort of wandering, he goes around, he's just meant to be taking a long weekend, meets up a couple of other campers or climbers, and then they go their separate ways, and then he gets trapped. And it's just him talking to a video camera and slightly hallucinating, slightly remembering things, reconsidering his life, and then trying to work out how he can escape.
If he can escape.
If he can escape. And, yeah, it's a very... And what could be quite a dull story is very interestingly told.
I don't think... how can it really be... It can be continual, but I don't think it can really be dull. Now read, because of the link he gave me, the actual... The climax of the film when he does actually do the deed. And apparently that bit of text is worse graphically than what you actually see.
Yeah, because it's based on a book. Because this did actually happen to a guy, I think in 2003 or 4, who then wrote a book about it. So it's based on that book. But one of the newspaper published that section of the book when he's talking about cutting his own arm off and the mechanisms of it. And, yeah, the description is worse than the film. It's not sort of a Saw level playing up the gore.
Oh, no. No,
I mean, it's...
Very matter of fact, if anything.
Well,
else.
Yeah, and in the film, it's over fairly quickly, but it is an uncomfortable watch, and it is gory. But
surely
they don't.
Not.
Well, but it's not like it all just happens off screen, and you see him sort of doing stuff. Hey, I'm free. I mean, it is. It's they focus on it because it's an important part of the story, and it's not. It's probably not for the squeamish, but nor is it gratuitous for the sake of it. Mm. And especially one or two aspects of how he has to escape. And it's the logistics of it as well. Because all he's got is this rubbish little multi-tool thing. Because he didn't know he was going to have to cut his arm off. So he just thought he was going for a walk. So he has to work with this tiny, relatively blunt knife. And just, yeah. And things like your arm bones. How do you get around them? And so, yeah, that's what's interesting.
Mm.
Much like The King's Speech, it's James Franco's film. He is the only, he's really the only person in it.
Is it much of the film with just him in it, then? Is it?
Yeah, mostly.
Pretty much entirely.
Yeah, I mean, the occasional sort of flashback or semi-hallucination. Mm. Weirdly, there's a bit with Clemence Poesy, who was in one of the Harry Potter films, who is sort of an ex-girlfriend who he just thinks about a bit and is kind of re-evaluating his life. And she's probably the only other... Well, except for the two other climbers he meets, or walkers who he meets briefly. It's almost entirely him and lots of women in sort of different contexts, and his parents briefly. But, yeah, it's directed by Danny Boyle, and it's just very inventively directed at times. It's not a comfortable watch, but it is a very worthwhile watch, and just the achievement of it. James Franco makes it, really.
I want to go and see it, even though I know the ending and I've read that bit. Mm. I still want to go and see it. So
yeah, and he does a very good job. And also, James Franco does look a lot like the actual guy as well. I saw a photo, because in the film he's taking photos of stuff as he's walking around, the situation he finds himself in. And then in the Telegraph they posted a picture over this article. And I thought, oh, that's just a still from the film of James Franco in that position. And then looked closely, and it wasn't. It was the actual guy with the boulder and the rock and all this stuff laid out. And in the film, it's just recreated exactly. I think even the boulder's the same shape. And it's just very, very nicely done. Go and see it, ultimately.
I intend to. With a little knock of the mic stand while I do it. Yes, that's how much. Yeah.
Coming at you.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to do my catchphrase, but I've forgotten it. Deal with it.
Yes.
And you all.
Now I'm just turning into violent abuse.
That's something a bit harsh. It isn't very me. Yeah. Deal with it, yeah.
Yes. Deal with the fact that you haven't seen it yet?
I don't know. I'm not confused.
I know. Give up on the catchphrase.
I haven't slept. It's time for movie mashups.
Hey!
Yeah, I feel we haven't done these for a while.
No, well, we haven't done a podcast for a while.
That's true. I know, we did the Christmas quiz.
We did in the Christmas quiz.
Ah, fair enough. That was recent-ish.
Yeah, recent enough. So, you know the rules. Two films are put together, and then a description is made. Thus.
That's it, yeah. So email us in your own, by the way. We should just take any two films whose titles overlap.
In their entirety.
Yes. So, for example, just one we did last time, which was an intergalactic space battle? No, what was your... set inside a man's body.
Oh, yes.
Yes, or a spoof of Star Wars, yes, set in a man's bloodstream. Yes. And that's inner space balls.
That's right. Yeah.
So that, but then you just describe that film and email it to us.
Yes.
Probably without the titles. And then we try and guess it. And if we can't guess it, then email us back with the titles.
Indeed.
Yes. Podcast at moviebanter.co.uk.
That's the one. That's anyway. Such as, for example, an Aussie Bond on a mission skiing through a computer game with neon lights. Which would be...
On Her Majesty's Secret Service and Tron.
Yeah.
Oh, Tron, Her Majesty's Secret Service.
There you go. It's that simple. That's how simple the game is. That is how simple the game is.
Terrible. Or, I can't read them for people, sorry.
Now, we've got some more. These are from Jed. Now, I forget, because this is before we introduce the new rule where some of the things... The overlapping things may not work. We'll give it a go. We'll give it a go.
Okay.
Zombie aliens descend upon the Earth, and a government research project based in Area 51 may hold the key to their defeat. That, along with Jeff Goldblum's laptop.
Oh, yeah, no, this works.
So this is Independence Day...
Of the Dead.
Yeah. You see what happened there?
Okay.
Zombies and aliens. They haven't met together, have they? We've got cowboys and aliens soon.
Yeah.
Zombies and aliens would be good. I'd watch
that. That could work. Yeah. Although I think because zombies are quite slow and aliens are quite terrifying, I think aliens just tear through them and then be on their way.
That's true.
Just have the rest of their day.
Isn't there a book called Vampirates, which is like vampires plus pirates?
Nice. I know there's Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
I'm looking forward to that one.
Yes.
That'd be great. So let's do another mashup, shall we?
Yes. Hang on, I can't read these now for some reason. My vision's cleared. The drink has finally left my system. Let me come with you. MI5 hire Mark Wahlberg, Charlize Theron, Seth Green, and Jason Statham to go to Venice and rob a safe containing compromising pictures of a senior royal.
Now, the senior royal thing was the bank job.
Oh, yes, but this is also the Italian, so it's like the Italian bank
Italian
job.
Italian bank job, the bank slash Italian bank job thing. Yes.
So it's broken.
Broken.
Broken. It's under the old rules before they were clarified.
After Dead, along with the cast of a hit sci-fi television show, is called upon by aliens who mistake the band for real-life space travellers.
Ah, yes. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy Quest.
Very good.
Sarah Jessica Parker and her bestest gal pals go shopping in a city where it is perpetually night, and therefore the bars never close. Probably Sex and the Dark City. Yeah.
I see.
Broken.
You're a harsh
Our broken monitor.
although increasingly, as Sarah Jessica Parker gets older, she's starting to resemble Richard Bryan. So, yeah, Richard O'Brien.
Yes.
That's a bit harsh.
Fair point.
Yes, but no. Yeah. That's harsh.
Takes a wig off.
But true. Oh. Anyway.
Tom Hanks, a decorated soldier, diagnosed with an incurable illness and told he has 6 months left to live, goes on his last mission, leading an elite team of Special Forces soldiers who are hired to stop a volcano from erupting. I'd see that film. Deal with it.
I'm sure. I thought I have seen that film. Saving Private Ryan.
Okay, saving...
And...
6 months left to live.
Yeah, what's that?
That's like the bucket list or Philadelphia, but no.
I don't know. It's
volcano, well, that's Dante's Peak.
Ryan.
Yeah.
Or volcano.
Joe versus the volcano. Might
no. No.
No.
No. I think we're stuck. I think we're
stoned
on that one.
Oh.
Yes. Jed, save us.
You win a prize.
Yes. Let us know what that one was.
You did let us know. I'll find out.
Oh, did it? Oh,
fair. Why don't you do the next one? I'll find out.
Oh, okay. Leo, yeah, are you now going to scroll down, putting the thing off the list?
Yep.
You hadn't thought this through, have you?
Leonardo
to someone, does something, and then everything happens.
Or nothing.
Yeah. Right. We'll cut this.
Leonardo DiCaprio. Well, I'll do this one first.
Fair enough.
Okay. Leonardo DiCaprio finds himself trapped in a futuristic colony, only to discover that he is really a clone of an FBI officer. He must join forces. There's a lot of joining forces, isn't there? He must join forces with fellow clone Scarlett Johansson to escape to freedom.
The Shutter Island.
The Shutter, yeah. Shutter
yeah.
the Island.
Yeah, sure. Shutter the Island.
Sure, that door.
Shutter the Island. It's a northern film.
It is.
Yeah. That could work, actually. Shutter the Island.
No, it
doesn't. Yes.
Broken.
I did realise, actually, we're deviating slightly, but filling the gap while Paul looks up the email, that Never Let Me Go, I think, is about sort of people giving organs or clones or something.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong, but I think that's what it's about.
So
it seems like sort of they've taken the island and made it massively dramatic. I could be wrong.
It looks like some wartime kind of.
Yeah, but there's all the scanning and saying, no, you're all existing for a purpose. It could not be that at all. But I'm sure in the film we see someone like on a surgical table But if it is about that, then it seems like The Island, but without Michael Bay. Like, you take The Island and get it directed by Kenneth Branagh instead of Michael Bay.
Yeah, The Island wasn't amazing, was it?
It was two interesting films, or two good films, but combined into one average one.
Yes.
Essentially. Scarlett Johansson in a skin tight suit, so your argument is invalid.
Paul?
G.I. Joe versus the Volcano.
Fair enough. Oh, yeah, because he is 6 months left. Yeah, focuses on the Saving Private Ryan.
I was thinking Tom Hanks was in the other film, in the G.I. Joe film, not in the Volcano.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Yes, no, trouble is, G.I. Joe, I enjoyed, despite it being rubbish, but I completely forgot it was about a volcano erupting. Which I think. Oh, no, darn they. Oh, no, it's not.
No, Joe versus the volcano. There is no volcano in G.I. Joe.
Oh, so it's just the Special Forces soldiers.
Yeah.
And that's the entire G.I. Joe
pretty,
thing.
Pretty
ah,
much.
That's why. Yeah. Making a sequel to G.I. Joe.
Is that right?
Which I'm not entirely unwilling to go and see.
Is it
because
G.I. Joe versus the volcano?
Probably not, which is a shame. Yeah. Opportunity missed there, I think.
I think so.
To tap into the market of people who loved early 90s mediocre rom coms.
Heck yeah.
With Meg Ryan playing. Isn't Meg Ryan playing like three different
parts?
People?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I want to see the other ones that we've got.
I'll let Jen get this one because I think they're all the same.
Let's try this. They're not all the same. What are you talking about? A group of toys regroup to rescue a toy astronaut by driving lots of fast cars around.
Toy story cars? I don't know.
Is it?
Regroup to rescue a toy astronaut by driving lots of fast cars around in a furious manner.
I don't like the way you're looking
at it.
In a very fast and a very furious manner.
Is it Toy Story Too Fast, Too Furious?
Correct.
Oh, I see.
Correct.
Right, so now let's have the next one, which will no doubt be two completely different films.
Doc and Marty reunite and head into the future, driving lots of fast cars around.
Back to the Future, Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yes.
Okay.
Michelle Pfeiffer in leathers, leader of the Pink Ladies, driving lots of fast cars around.
But to be fair, this is actually
That is basically
Grease
2. Grease 2.
Oh, yeah. I thought that. There are fast cars in there, aren't there, as well? Oh, forget it. Should we do the next film, then?
Yes.
It's up here, isn't it?
It's up top. It's all going wrong.
Hey, we're going to now review Tecont Vodutti.
Fair
enough. A.K.A. The Chronicles of Narnia, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. One of the longest titles in the history of long titles.
Yes. It's the kind of film that annoys as a website runner, because that's just going to throw off all my spacing.
Of course.
When screenshots of that start coming in, I'm going to have some very tiny writing to get that in. They just don't understand. They don't care.
Can't you just call it Voyage of the Dawn Treader?
Well, you thought so, but then people might not know it's a Narnia film, despite having an enormous talking lion in it.
I bet the producers just don't care about your plight.
I
bet they look at you and they go, na 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 Narnia.
It's like they have no interest in...
You'll always be young at heart, won't you?
Yeah. It'll always be young all over. Yeah. But yes. But Narnia as a film, rather than the title.
Hmm. Well, it's the third of the films, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yeah. And I'm not the first two Disney. And this isn't Disney. This is 20th Century Fox.
Oh.
Disney kicked it to the curb because it was too big a financial burden.
Why it got better?
Did
it get better?
Quite a good film.
Yeah,
particularly a good kids' film.
I find it hard. I can't really remember the last two quite well. It felt sort of broadly similar, as in fine, but unspectacular. I did enjoy it. Except, it was 3D.
I didn't see it in 3D. I'm delighted.
Fair enough. We only had 3D available. And it was just a bit dim occasionally. I took the glasses off. Hey, it's all bright and colour.
It ruins those sort of films, I think. It's a bit like Alice in Wonderland.
Well, they need to compensate for it.
But none of these Narnia films are really... I don't love any of them. I don't go, wow, at any of them. I think all of them, you sort of go, done an okay job.
Ticks over.
But is that the original story, or is that the adaptation?
If it's a weakish story, then it doesn't translate well to a...
Well, it might be a lovely book for kids, but does it work as a film?
True. Well, I know, I looked up the story of this one, and it's pretty true. They sort of reworked a few things, but it's basically the same story.
I seem to recall the BBC TV series seemed to have a bit more to it.
They probably didn't have the effects budget or the capability back then, so they kind of had to throw more at it
rely on effects.
It was an excellent drama. I remember growing up with it.
I remember loving them.
Maybe the fact that they were in like 25 minutes.
It might suit episodes better. Mm. I don't know. None of these. I just think
chapters,
partly,
pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, partly, I've never to slag off young actors and child actors because they're only kids.
Yeah,
but I've never found any of them that compelling or that good. Actually, in this one, the cousin Eustace I thought was quite good.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Who weirdly we found out the weekend is a friend of ours or the brother of a friend of ours. Yes, at the risk of not name dropping because it'd mean nothing to you. Luke Parfitt knows him really well.
Well, yeah. I heard as well that he was in Son of Rambo.
Oh, really?
And before that, he actually was in this. He tried stand up comedy from the age of about 11.
Right.
And there's a project venture thing called School of Comedy. That's right.
School of Comedy.
And he was the sort of the first graduate from that to actually do something decent, which is
he
right.
Was, I saw some of the episodes of that series, and he was the best one.
Right.
He acting wise and delivery. I don't know about who wrote it or that side of it, but he was clearly one to watch. Mm. So. Yeah. It's
he definitely has capabilities in this and does. He brings a proper character to it, whereas all the rest of it will be a bit bland.
I would say if you like, you know, given that I think he's the best thing in it, if you like sort of his style, then watch Son of Rambo because that's a much better film.
Yeah, I haven't.
And
really
I would
nice
really like
film,
to see that.
Good bit of heart to it. It's really just a nice film. Really nice film. Whereas Narnia, I thought, well, you know.
No, but it is fine. I watched it and enjoyed it, but I will probably forget about it. Yeah. Much as I have the other two, I can't really remember many specifics.
I'm not
going
to rush back to see any of them, really. No. I thought the first one was quite Narnia. This one was Narnia. The second one was Narniest, probably. But,
See, this one's also...
That's my last Narnia joke,
totally
by the way.
Narnia.
That's what I call Narnia.
I think also, possibly because of the 20th Century Fox angle, or possibly because... The nature of the story, or because it'll sell better if they can make it, pitch it to more a wider audience. This one has more religious undertones, or even, frankly, overtones.
Yeah.
Just tones.
Massive tones.
Throughout it. Whereas the first two didn't really. The first two, you can sort of draw the parallels a bit. Whereas this one is far more, there's a lot of, no, you've got to have belief, belief. All these people
known
in my
by
world.
Name.
I know, exactly.
Oh, okay, wow, no sanity on that.
Yeah, yeah.
And things that's probably. Only first mentioned in the in the third story, but yeah. So I don't. It shouldn't be enough to put everyone off, but it's just noticeable as a difference. But it may also appeal to more people.
Yeah, to be honest, it gives it another.
Yeah.
It gives it another angle, which is
And also people who really love the stories for the religion aspect might have thought it was a bit lacking in the other two, and now it's sort of more. So I don't know if the plan is to continue making the others.
I mean.
I'd like to see the others made, actually. I think also because I think this is where the TV series stopped.
I can't remember. Was
that right?
Was it because there's the... I went because my flatmate got
all
the books.
I don't remember the others.
Because there's the Silver Chair.
Silver Chair, Last Battle, Horse and His Boy.
Oh, that's the one I can remember.
And
it's like the
Magician's
Nephew. Yeah.
That's right.
And the Magician's Nephew is sort of a prequel.
Yes, that's right.
Was written afterwards.
Well, let's face it; they're not. I doubt they're going to make them all, at least not to this standard. So
no, I think they.
Yeah,
I think they start
at some point. Probably. I'd quite like to see the rest done because I can't remember the books and don't want to read them again.
No, they're all very short. But the Magician's Nephew, I think, is sort of a prequel with all different people. Or is Mr. Tumnus in it?
Might be some link, something like that. Yeah.
But it's mostly a new story. So it should be
a
bit of a hard tell. And the Last Battle, just reading the plot summary on Wikipedia, sounds mental.
I think they just throw everything at it, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, it was, again, the whole biblical allegory thing. That's meant to be Revelation.
Yes.
It's meant to be just like chaos and dragons.
And it seems like also everyone dies ultimately.
Pretty much,
On Earth and in Narnia, it's just, it's carnage. And I thought that'll be a bit of a hard sell, really.
Yeah.
So, the end of the film, hey, everyone's dead, but they're fine somewhere else, honest.
They should probably do it in just as a 5-minute deleted scene Easter egg at the end of one of the DVDs. That'll do. Just we've done it. You know, you don't see 2 hours of this.
Yes. Or of course they could just take the world of Narnia and make new stories in it, which might be a bit of a.
I don't know if C.S. Lewis's estate would be
sure
that. You know.
No.
He's buried in Guildford, isn't he?
Really?
Is he?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't remember.
Possibly.
I think he is.
What a lovely story.
I wondered what that lump was in your back garden ball.
It wasn't me, Governor.
I never touched him.
It was C.S. Lewis or Lewis Carroll. And
Lewis Carroll. The one who wrote Alice in Wonderland.
That's right.
Looking glass.
I get confused.
Because in the pub garden down by the river, there's lots of little Alice in Wonderland statues around.
That's right. There you are. So come visit Guildford. The place to stay for the London 2012 Olympics.
Are you planning on setting up a B&B?
I might do.
Don't worry about the lumps in Paul's back garden. It's all Last Supper.
Exactly. We didn't burn them.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Should we
move
on? So Narnia is fine.
Yeah, nice. Nice little moral stories for
you
children.
You could do worse.
Well.
No, well, very that is good. True, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's got a good
and
family message to it.
And a bit of sword fighting and... I think great for kids, to be honest. Probably
film. It's a good kids' family film, but grown-ups may want a bit more to it.
I quite like the bouncing trolls.
Yes.
Yeah. That's quite good, yes.
Yeah, they're quite good. That was it, really.
But yeah, fair enough. And similarly, Tron Legacy.
Similarly, again, the end of a franchise that
probably
should have been a long time ago.
Well, yes and no. You see, the Tron Legacy is a sequel, like 30-ish years later, sequel to Tron. And I've never seen Tron, but I know of it, but not specifics of it. and first off, I think, as I'm a living evidence of, you didn't have to have seen Tron in order to understand Tron Legacy. You get caught up to speed. I feel you'd probably get more out of it if you know Tron. I think there's a few questions that are probably a bit of background.
You might be fonder of it.
Yes, true as well. But I enjoyed the spectacle of it. It's very interesting looking, and performances are all decent. But it's more about the time for the duration of the film, provided I stopped myself asking too many questions, I was enjoying it.
Right.
And then occasionally I found myself thinking, hang on, why is that? Why doesn't that work? And what are they doing there? And as soon as you start pulling at threads, you start realising the whole thing makes no sense. Well, no, it makes no sense. But like in The Matrix, they set up this computerised world, essentially. But they explain how it works and the rules, and you can do this and you can't do this, and this happens for this reason. And it's all just woven into the plot. It's not too exposition heavy. But you end up thinking, by and large, everything works for a reason and you realise how everything connects. And in this, they just don't.
They go, oh, plot point. And shiny thing.
Exactly.
Okay,
hey, right. Look at the bike race. Yes. Aaron, he's eating food. How did he get food? Oh, just ignore that. Let's move on to the next thing. And cause he's eating food at one point, and he sort of looks inquiringly at the sort of runner beans he's eating. And no one just... But it doesn't ruin the plot. It's not critical to the plot, how there's real food in it. But for me, personally anyway, I just found myself thinking, but how have they got food? Why? And so you end up thinking about that.
Why do they have food? Why do they need food?
And they could have just thrown in a line just saying, it's digital representation of actual food. It just it means you feel, just throw a line in you stop thinking.
Is it like children's TV show Nightmare when they eat food by putting it in a knapsack? And otherwise your face falls apart in the corner of the screen.
I was saying anything like that. Any sort of...
I love Nightmare.
But any sort of made-up explanation just to stop you thinking they've not thought any of this through at all.
No.
And there's a point towards the end where they need to get to a portal in the distance, sort of miles outside of the city. And they say, let's hop this freight train that's going to the portal. And then none of them seem to think, why is there a freight train going to the portal? It's a portal in the middle of nowhere. Nothing should be going here. And then they find out there's a train. But, yeah, there's so many points where I just thought...
have a big army on it. Oh, look.
Exactly. And all there's a point as well when Jeff Bridges, we find out, is hiding out. I'm not ruining anything, but is hiding out in the world of Tron, sort of away from the city. And it seems to be basically a city and then surrounded by a complete wasteland. But at one point, the bad guy is standing in the city, looking out at the wasteland with just this bright point of light, the only lit-up bit outside of the wasteland. Well, basically thinking, don't know where Jeff Bridges is, could be anywhere. But again, there could be an explanation. It could be, no, because it's digital, unless we know how to get to him, we can't, or something. But because they don't answer any of these questions, you're just there thinking, it's all just thrown together and say, this happens because the plot says it should happen.
And there's a young Jeff Bridges and an old Jeff Bridges, is that right?
Yes, and the young Jeff Bridges is nicely done. He's basically a character called Clue, who is someone he created, and then it's all gone a bit wrong.
Okay.
Although there is also a young Jeff Bridges who is a real young Jeff Bridges is sort of at the start of the film, sort of 1987, and we see him, and then we flash forward, and that is nicely done and generally works. Because at the start of the film, when it's meant to be a real human being, he's mostly sort of in shadow, and so it kind of hides it.
Get away with it. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. It's not perfect. But
is it a bit like Brad Pitt in The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, where as long as he doesn't move, you go, that looks quite good. And then as soon as he moves, you go...
I'm just curious as to how many films would you have of two characters talking and you'd have the column of a window frame covering his face?
Yes, a little bit. But that's only a very short sequence to kind of cover it up. But then when he's meant to be a computerised character, you see him far more full face because it doesn't matter if he looks a bit creepy because he's meant to be a computerised character. And admittedly, everyone else looks perfectly normal, but you can get away with it more. And it's impressive technology, but yes, you need to be forgiving of it. And the main guy is fine. Olivia Wilde is in it, playing sort of a computer programmer who's helping with kind of the rebellion, who is, well, hot. But performs well as well.
It's got a lovely overall style, the film. I think it's, like the original, it's low on subject matter, great on look. And I think that's the main thing. The legacy has continued in that respect.
Yes, and there will almost certainly be more of a franchise. The ending is not so much open-ended, but there's stuff left to work with.
Are we getting Tron 3?
Possibly.
Well, they've left it open for it.
And apparently they are musing on it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't know how it did in the box office.
I don't think it did as well as they hoped. But I think it has done well enough to warrant a sequel. So we'll see.
And again, it was in 3D, but I actually think it... Well, not all of it was. The idea was you put the glasses on and...
Well, it said you keep the glasses on, but they had... first time I've ever seen this, basically saying some scenes were shot in 2D, some are in 3D. It's meant to be viewed this way. Please keep your glasses on throughout the film. And I didn't really notice the switch.
Okay.
But also because of the nature of the film, because it is basically quite dark with lots of brightly lit up things, I didn't sit there thinking, it's quite gloomy. Enough, yeah. So that was all right, actually. And yeah, the action bits are quite exciting, and there's a bit of plot, and there's a general point to it, but it's just all very tenuous, and just if they'd had about 20 extra lines in, just answering the occasional question and just cluing it all together.
Tron Legacy.
So it's all right, and hopefully if they do another one, it might be a bit improved, possibly.
But it won't because it'll be the third leg.
Well, yes. So it's another relatively average, but that doesn't mean bad. It just means literally average. I mean, some good bits, some bad bits. Could do worse, could do better.
Mm. Fair news.
Yeah.
So.
And what are we on time-wise?
At
the risk of ruining the magic behind the curtain?
Well, we've done about 45 minutes, plus a bit. So should we do the tourist in about 3 minutes?
Or I can do the tourist in about a minute. Really.
Hey, let's do it. Let's go.
Much like the last two films. That's all right.
Okay.
I thought The Tourist was beautiful. I thought Angelina Jolie looked gorgeous in everything that she wore.
Yes.
The set in Venice, beautiful, stunning, oozing sophistication. Johnny Depp is just cool. Mm. But the chemistry between them wasn't necessarily believable. It was a good film. I actually really quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did enjoy it, but I think it slightly lost me towards the end. Or there's a weird... It's about two-thirds or sort of... three-fifths and four-fifths of the way through, it slows down a bit weirdly. But beyond that, it all holds together. And it's not quite as sparky as I would have liked. It sort of gives the impression it should have been kind of not a farce, but a sort of a caper movie, almost. Yeah. And it's not quite capery enough. There are moments of it, and then it sort of slows down again. It speeds up and slows down. But it's very watchable the whole way through. Johnny and Angelina Jolie... work well, individually.
Individually,
but chemistry
very
wise, it's not quite
together.
There.
You just it's more brother and sister kind of thing going on. Mm. But
it's worth a rental, I'd say, to watch it, and it is a very, very pretty looking film.
Absolutely beautiful.
It just could need a little bit more to make the magic.
People were going, is it really Golden Globes nomination material?
No. I think this is what Ricky Gervais was talking about. I think they actually were. There was a degree of bribery and. Untowardness going on.
It's not as bad as critics and various celebrities have said about it, but it's enjoyable, perfect Sunday viewing, I'd say. Mm. Put it on while you're ironing, the time will whiz by.
Yes,
it's a good ironing
great.
Film.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's pretty to watch. It's quite funny in places.
It's not fast moving enough. Not in a bad way, but it's not like you need to pay attention all the time. You can sort of glance up and sort of get the gist.
So it's
what's
good
going
if
on.
You don't watch it.
No, because let's face it, I've got a few films in my DVD collection that I should watch, like There Will Be Blood, right? Do you know what? I've had it for over a year and I still haven't watched it because it's not like, I really need to watch this today.
Paul's looking at me, just can't. I have no films like this. All those films, I watch them on a regular basis.
Exactly.
I love them.
Schindler's List.
Schindler's List. I Eat, Sleep, Breathe It is my
so
gosh,
actually
daily
having
viewing.
A film that you know that you will quite like
so
to watch.
So you're saying that you'd
good.
Rather watch bad films...
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Enjoyable films than worthy films. Sometimes.
No, not bad films, yes. There are times. Wouldn't you rather watch an enjoyable but relatively lightweight film as opposed to a very high quality but quite heavy going film?
Well, Not all the time.
The road.
No, no, I know not all the time, but there
for
are...
For example...
The road.
The road is would a you very ever... worthy
no, well,
good
no, but
film.
I didn't think it was high quality.
Oh, okay. Really?
No. But I would rather... Yeah, I'd rather watch, most of the time, a high quality, if slightly heavy going film, than something which is tosh.
Occasionally.
Yeah, but if you're just doing...
But occasionally, but sometimes, if you're, you know, hungover or something, or if you're...
Yeah.
Depends how much you drink, but you're both alcoholics, so obviously...
How dare you? I haven't drunk in hours.
I never drink in iron.
Don't drink it. Hey kids, don't drink an iron. Don't do it.
Yeah, just drive somewhere and then get someone else to
just,
do the ironing.
Exactly. Just iron what's a tourist. Yeah. That's the message here.
No, but no, because often when I'm at my computer, I'll often have a film on, and I almost don't want anything too absorbing because then it can sort of distract me.
But that's the thing. If you're going to put a film on to not watch it, then
yes, but there is a difference between a film that is on and you're not entirely watching. But then, but certain films. You end up, a weird case in point is Tears of the Sun, Bruce Willis,
right.
Shooty film. I got that on rental, stuck it on in the background. And some films, put it on in the background, and we'll find myself, I'll follow it, and also be half paying attention, but we'd be paying attention. Mm. Tears of the Sun, played through it in entirety, and I thought, I have no idea what happened in that. Just did right. nothing more. Let it play through again, still nothing, not a clue, not a right. single bit of it went in. So that is a bad film. Whereas The Tourist, I would be watching and paying attention and following, but you don't have to be there all the time.
For example, I'm... Right.
Paul's got a point to make. What is it?
Just listening.
He's
just
basically
judging. Just partly judging.
Well, for example, a lot of... I mean, I like to think that I'm interested in quite a lot of different variety of genre of film.
Mm. Right? At least to buy and put on your shelf and not watch any.
No, that's the only one.
Okay.
Thank you. But, you know, I won't necessarily... I've never seen, for example, Sex and the City.
But you're a woman. How is this possible?
I know. I don't really go in for the mean girls chick flicks kind of thing.
Girls is actually quite good.
Well, maybe. Well done. Thank you. But I wouldn't sit and watch that. I wouldn't put that on as a comfort, you know? Which is what I think a lot of chick flicks are. They're comfort films. Mm. For me, something like this would be a better kind of sit down and indulge film. Something that's relatively easy on the eye.
Yeah.
And okay. easy, I suppose. Okay. Go okay. on then, judge me.
No, I'm judging. Just that's quite all right. You, well done, you.
Thank
well done.
You.
I just don't. I'm curious to know what filmmakers would prefer if they think, well, I know I've made a good film, that therefore you're never going to watch, or would they think, well, I'd rather make a not good film that you'll put on in the background.
I promise, I will watch. There Will Be Blood this weekend.
Really,
really.
Yes.
We should have.
Don't promise.
Let's
that.
Have an
no,
episode.
I will. I
Schindler's List, There Will Be Blood, and the Italian Job remake. we'll each watch our designated piece.
No, I want to watch the Italian Job remake.
And of course, exactly. This is the whole point. This is the whole point.
Yes, I think we should do that.
I'm a baby, aren't I? I'd rise to it. Anyway, shall we
yes.
move on?
Yes, we have. Yeah, this ended up taking far longer than intended.
That's not a fix. We were going to do best royal-based film.
Yes.
We haven't trailed this at all, but given the King's Speech,
yes.
We would do best royal-based film.
Yes.
So would anyone like to start the ball rolling?
Well, there's quite a few contenders out there, really, aren't they? But when you said this before, the first thing that came to mind is a film that I haven't seen for a long time, but I know I loved it, and so I shall quite happily take it to my desert island and watch again, and remember better.
Which is?
The Madness of King George. What? Yes.
What?
It's just great. There you go.
It's a good film.
That's all you need.
And Nigel Hawthorne and, and the
other people.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Madness of King John, part 3.
Yes.
King John?
King John?
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Him,
the fella. Yeah. With the crown. John.
King someone. King John. No.
George. Ringo.
Ringo. Anyway. I'm actually going to go with The King's Speech.
Oh.
I'm not sort of... I don't have a huge experience of royalist films. Mm. Man of King George, I did enjoy.
Yeah.
Haven't actually seen The Queen, which I probably should.
Yeah.
And obviously you've got your Shakespeare's.
Yeah.
Henry V, I had a lot of time for.
That's true.
But King's Speech, it works well for me. I think because it balances the humour and the seriousness very well. And it's very well cast.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with The King's Speech.
A fair plan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I will go with The Queen, actually.
You'd be lucky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she'd be lucky.
That's short. That's almost treasonous, surely.
What, to say that I'm a catch? How is that treasonous?
To imply you want to
no,
to service
no,
the Queen.
I didn't imply that at all. I just said any woman would be glad to have me.
Really?
Well,
you're making it better.
It's a lie. It's not treason. It's just a lie.
Oh, that's one man's lie. It's another man's treason.
It's not working out well either way.
I'm going to go with The Queen. I've said that before. Only because it was a good film. And the other thing is Young Victoria was good. Mrs. Brown I haven't seen. Lion in Winter I want to see and haven't, because that one
I don't know that all
playing it with the second or something.
Okay.
A very good film from what I gather, and big play and that sort of thing. But The Queen I really enjoyed, partly because the performances were brilliant. The script was very good. And I quite like the fact the performances were just the right side of impression that, like, Michael Sheen as Tony Blair sounded like him, looked like him, but also he brought his own things to it. Helen Mirren as the Queen, again, sounded, looked like, but also you could tell, bring your own thing to it. So you could come away going, well, that probably wasn't exactly how it all happened, but they told a very, very good, compelling job of how it probably did. And they all looked and sounded like, it just felt, in a period of recent history, behind closed doors, that we suddenly felt a little bit more enlightened about one writer's view of it.
So,
Fair enough.
Three good'uns.
Yeah, that's what we are. The three good'uns.
Hey.
They don't. No. please send your emails in to podcast@moviebanter.co.uk.
Yes, or you find us on Twitter @moviebanter and on Facebook at facebook.com/moviebanter. And then you get, whenever the podcast goes up, you get it there, or on iTunes, or every form of media known to man.
Exactly.
Well, mainly those. So,
good.
Let us know.
We'll leave it there.
Yeah.
And we will see you, speak to you next time.
Hello.
Bye.
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 Deal with it.
Stop.